There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Ross Kemp. Over the last 18 years, I've made some 90-odd documentaries, predominantly in hostile environments, from Afghanistan to Syria, from El Salvador to the Congo. And it's fair to say that during that time, I found myself in a few interesting situations. I've been shot at, tear-gassed, had knives pulled on me, and spears thrown at me. But in all those years, what's impressed me the most is the resilience of the human spirit. Our ability, no matter where we're from, to overcome and make it through to the other side. So, in my new series, The Kemp Cast, I'll be talking to some incredible individuals who all have engaging stories to tell and have themselves overcome some extremely tough moments in their lives. Right now, we're living in unprecedented times, and we should be doing all we can together to get through this as safely as possible. I hope that if you subscribe to the Kempcast and hear how my guests overcame their toughest moments, it may help you overcome yours, whether you're going through one right now or you're faced with one in the future.
Joining me today is international rugby union player Heather Fisher. She's represented Team GB at the Olympics and also was part of the World Cup winning team of 2014. I hope you enjoy the show.
Heather, how are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Do I call you Fish or do I call you Heather?
Definitely Fish. Only my mum calls me Heather.
Really? Okay. And how long has that been the nickname?
God, since I started sport. I think it's naturally in sport, isn't it, where you always call someone by their surname or nickname, or it's either Fish Cakes or Fish Finger or Fisher or Fish, you absolute knob, you know.
Yeah, I'm Kempy on the pitch, or was when I played. So we share that, don't we, I suppose, the love of rugby. Well, I mean, I was going to start with your childhood, but let's go rugby straight away. When did you first start playing?
Started playing, well, I was first cap for England at the age 26, but I started playing when I was about 16, 17 on the back of an eating disorder. I'll be honest with you, I didn't know it was the sport I was aiming for, and it wasn't the sport that I thought, right, this is my sport and this is the Olympic Games and this is where I'm going in my life. It was just a sport I fell into. I loved pushing myself to the absolute max. I loved like just training so hard, and then it was like, well, it was almost like looking at the Olympics and going, which sport could I actually play, which one could I play? And before I knew it, I ended up in the route of rugby, and once I was on that route, I think once you're on that I suppose that stage into going internationals and stuff, it was just the path that I went down, you know.
But you know, from reading, you always knew, or you always wanted to be an athlete of some description and to get to the top of whatever discipline you chose. Yeah,
that was, I must admit, that was like the pinnacle for me. Like growing up watching the Olympics on TV, it was like my aim was to be an athlete, and I didn't know how, I didn't know when, I didn't know what sport. I used to take myself off cycling, do martial arts, rowing. I used to do literally everything, and for me, I don't know, I kind of look back and go, could I have gone to a different sport? I probably could have. But it was about just being an Olympic Games. It wasn't even about medaling at the Olympic Games, if I'm honest with you. It was about being the best I could be amongst the best athletes in the world. And that's what drove me to like literally insane sessions. But it ended up being rugby. I ended up training the back garden, just passing the ball. And then I ended up at the local rugby club. But that was on the back of anorexia. It was on the back of my parents going through divorce. It was on the back of my mom.
We'll get there.
But it was on the back of all that. So I suppose when I went into rugby, it was like I was just in rugby. It wasn't like, oh wow, now I'm going to be X, Y, and Z. It was just I'm just in rugby, and I didn't know where it was going to go. I just knew I wanted to be at that Olympic Games,
which you succeeded in, and you've won a World Cup. Haven't you as well?
Yeah, I've been to 5 World Cups, 2 7s, 3 15s, World Cup winners in 2014, Sports Personality of the Year in 2014. So I've been pretty busy.
We're going to go back to your childhood, but also while we're on the subject of sports, Premiership started back, the football's back, male, but there doesn't seem to be much female sport being played, maybe a with the exception of golf.
Yeah, this is really tough, isn't it? Because it's close to my heart. I think, you know, I'm not here to preach about females and where it should be, right? But what I do honestly know as being female is that it's fucking hard, right? It is so different to being a male and being male in sport, especially, right? The fact that our England contracts have been taken away, whether you know that or not, that is out there now. Whether the fact that, you know, the Olympics goes ahead or not, there is still a sevens program going. Like you said, male rugby's back. That's all paid for. You know, the football's back. They can afford the testing, hence why they're back. And then you've got women's sports really not playing at all at the moment. And I just kind of feel if women's sport can't make it now, when can it make it? Because we're all about this open mind and we're all about females being strong and females on the up. It shouldn't really be a female thing for Monis Kempe. It should be more about if you're good at what you do, you go and you fly, that's it. We take gender out of it. But it is pretty frustrating when you've got sports going out there and the females aren't, you know?
So is the reason for this purely sponsorship, but there's more money in the male game?
Yeah, it's a vicious circle. I think you get caught between more money in the male game, more sponsors, it gets more TV. And then obviously, if you flip that around its head, if the females aren't getting the sponsors and the sponsors don't get the TV coverage, the TV coverage don't want it, and it goes around in that cycle. So it's almost like a buy-in from the businesses. Like you're starting to see in business now where business people go, oh, we need more females. But it shouldn't be about needing more females. It should want the females because females are good at, we're all good at certain things, aren't we? You know, you're good at chasing, you know, like crazy TV programs around the world. You know, I'm good at playing rugby, you know, and it is what it is. And it shouldn't be about the guy or the girl, the gender. And I suppose, yeah, it's a frustrating circle between media, sponsors, and then TV, and then TV rights and how it happens.
Do you think that the female game, even at international level now, may be under threat then?
Yeah, so recently the sevens contracts have been absolutely kaput, guys and girls, not just girls. The sevens programme from the RFU have been completely stopped. Now we've still got Tokyo. The new Tokyo 2021 is still there.
If it happens,
it gets confirmed in October or not confirmed. I think if anything can bring sport together, it will be the Olympic Games. Olympics always unites everyone, doesn't it? Around the world, from wherever you are, it doesn't matter what you look like, what you have, what you haven't got, where you're from. Sport unites everyone. So I really hope it does get back. But with that in mind, I think it's around the world, we're all going back now and sports are going back. But at the moment, as you can see, I'm still walking the streets of my house, which I find really difficult. I feel like mentally you go in and out of vibes. Like I'm used to being so ridiculously busy. And all of a sudden I'm kind of clocking the steps of my house thinking, what do I do next? Where do I go? And it's not because I haven't got stuff on. It's more the fact that I'm just, my purpose at the moment has changed so much. And like a click of a finger, my life has gone upside down.
So, you know, I've worked out how old you are because I was born with a 4 as well, but 20 years earlier than you. So you're 36, all right? 36-ish?
So, yeah. Why is it as you get older, you forget your age, don't you?
Trust me, that's because you're getting older. But, you know, 36, isn't that about the time that most people pull the pin?
Yeah.
Yeah. I assume then that Olympics will be your last, probably your last hurrah, yeah?
Yeah, totally. My aim was the Olympic Games now, like summer now, and that was it. Boots were being hung up. Yeah, that was it. I think, you know, I was having a discussion the other day about females, and it's females in sport and business. But if you want a family, if you want all that, you know, the guys have got their family at home, because it doesn't take the females, you know, it's obviously a completely different role, isn't it, for a female to have a baby with, and they've got business to think about, got sport to think about.
You can't run around getting hit by people while you're carrying.
No, exactly. While I'm carrying a little child, you just can't do it. Whereas obviously it's very different for a guy. So it does affect everything. But you know what? It is what it is, isn't it? And we are where we are. And you know, you make do what you've got, and you set out to make better choices, to change things in the future, to inspire the next generation. You set out to do that in the hope that one day people will start to open their eyes up a little bit wider, and then you'll see change.
There's something that you said, and I really liked it. I'm not really in it for the medals. You're in it for the sort of the experience. Is that right?
Yeah, I've never been bothered about the medals. Is that weird? And that might be really weird for some athletes to hear. Or yeah, I've never been. I wouldn't even know where half my medals are now. They're somewhere. I wouldn't even know where they are. But I have one hung up, and that was from 2 years ago, qualifying at the worst tournament in Russia, with probably no food, in the middle of nowhere, against the Russians. And it was just, as a team, it was absolutely a brilliant and unique experience. That's the only medal I have hanging up. The Commonwealth Games, World Cup medals, 7s, 15s. I'll be honest, hand on heart, I don't actually know where half them are. Because it isn't about the medals. I don't think as well you can, I don't believe in chasing the money. I don't believe in chasing medals. Obviously it drives you, and obviously you need it. I'm not saying we don't. But what I think has driven me personally is my experiences, the will and the drive to want to be better as a person and as a sports person. And that's what's always driven me to be at my best.
But you are a bit of a comeback queen as well. I mean, how many serious injuries have you sustained in your career?
Serious, probably.
I call breaks serious.
Okay. Three big injuries. The rest I can kind of take, you know, a few minutes out. But three big ones.
Talk me through them.
My first biggest ones was tore my whole shoulder, so that got reattached. Again, it was serious, but you know, it was a big one, because it's, you know, you need your shoulders, and you need it in rugby. Everyone does their shoulders. You wouldn't be a rugby player if you didn't rip your shoulder off. I had really bad tendonitis in my knee, where they had to rip my knee open, and had septicemia on the back of that knee as well. I had blood poisoning the same leg.
Really?
Yeah, so I had blood poisoning, and then I had a fractured kneecap. So when I had tendonitis, it wasn't as straightforward as just tendonitis. It was pretty bad. That took me out for a good couple of years. But then my biggest injury, which was the hardest one, was my back, because I had a back fracture in my back. And it was only one fracture.
You went up to catch the ball and you caught it behind your head, is that right?
Yeah, so I went up to catch almost above my head, and I put my knees down and I caught it. As I caught it, I went back, and then someone took me out mid-air. And so I ended up landing on my back, back here.
Well, your arms are behind you, effectively.
Yeah, up here, yeah. And
it wasn't just one fracture though, was it?
It was originally, and then it went 2, 3, 4. So it got worse and worse and worse. So what was really weird about this injury is that as a sports person, I feel like I'm invincible. That's how I play rugby. I play the game of life. Like, I feel like I'm invincible. So when something happens, I suppose it shocked me, because I don't really set myself up thinking that's going to happen. But I walked off the pitch, and I never walk off the pitch. It just doesn't happen. So I walked off the pitch, and then the next day I carried on playing. The next day I was training, but I couldn't rotate. So it was really like, physios were like fish, but you're moving pretty well. And I hide injuries pretty well because I'm pretty robust. But I really couldn't rotate. Anyway, we rested a few weeks, went to a tournament, played a whole tournament. This tournament was pretty surreal, because we had one physio within a team, and it was literally like, "And I need you again. And it was literally like I had my personal physio, because I was in that much pain that I would start a game, come off ice bar physio, and my pain was that bad that I was just holding on for dear life. Because no one had said to me that I had a fracture, I just kept playing. So I played on for a tournament. After that tournament, we had it scanned, and it showed two fractures in my lower back. And then as an athlete, you're taught that pain is your friend. So in a way, you have pain, you know to back off, you know to rest. And I knew I had an unbelievable amount of pain in my back that kept going down to my leg. Like, I couldn't walk, and then it would change and go up my back. So it was moving all the time around my spine. So I rested, and then I had another scan. It showed three fractures, and then we rested in them 6 weeks. And then I had another scan. It showed four fractures.
So in four different parts, columns of your spine, you'd actually fractured.
Yeah, but they were below each other, which almost is worse, because then your disc, if your disc slips in, you're paralyzed. So it was pretty unbelievable news. I think when you feel like you're invincible, and I've set out, you know, I say it now quite like, you know, I'm okay with it. But if I take myself back in my head, when you're, you know, in your early 20s, you're starting your sports career, and that you know that you're good at what you do, but yet you're on the up and your aim is an Olympic Games. As an athlete, you're not sure which direction it's going yet, but I know where I want to be. I know I wanted to play for England now. And I kind of just like that, I realized actually it was taken away from me. And that was really tough, because then I realized that I wasn't invincible. And that might sound really stupid, but
no, it doesn't.
I've always felt like I'm invincible.
But you're not put in a cast.
Yes. So I was due to have surgery. So I was due to go down to Harley Street for surgery. And then the morning of surgery, my doctor called me and said, "Fish, we're not going to fuse you, because they were going to fuse my lower back. If you fuse a lower back, you know, people out there will know this. If you fuse, you can't move." So that would have affected the whole of my career. So it was a big decision made from the England doctor last minute. But they pulled me out of surgery and they said, "We're going to rehab you." And I was like, and there was no, you know, I was in my early 20s. There was no proof that this was going to work. There was no proof that I was going to get back strong. There was no proof that they weren't going to get worse and I could do this. But I knew I had a long road ahead of me. So I was back down on Harley Street, got strapped up, plastic acid from my neck and to my waist, strapped up. And that was really tough, because all of a sudden, you know, from my eating disorder, which we haven't spoken about yet, but from my eating disorder, then into a plastic cast, my nickname became Jelly Belly. I became Digger. I lost my hair. And all of a sudden, you know, it's
escalated. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Escalated. So, you know, for someone who was obviously totally obsessed with training, totally obsessed with achieving a goal, all of a sudden you're on your back in a plaster cast.
Yeah.
And the thing that you fear, the thing that you say, and I know you've said it, is that once you had an eating disorder, it's always in the background. Yeah. Somewhere.
It never leaves you.
Yeah. We'll talk about that in a minute, so there you are, and you can't exercise, and your dream is slowly slipping out the window. Plus you're one of your worst fears, which is the fear of putting on weight, is materializing, because you aren't as active. You can't be active.
Yeah, it was really hard. I'm not, you know, I sit here now talking about it, but yeah, I find it hard talking about it, because it's somewhere I never really go, because it was so hard. My rehab took 2 years to get back. And I remember sitting every day thinking, am I going to make it back? Because, you know, initially when I had my injury, I had so much pain, like unbelievable amounts of pain for probably 3 weeks, like ridiculous, like couldn't even move. And I was having to, we laugh about it, but I was having to, when I played rugby, when we didn't know it was fractured, but it was fractured, I was trying to hit people so hard that I would rebound back to my feet, because I couldn't push through my back. I couldn't push back up. So I was trying to run that hard that I either ran through them, or I collided with them so much that I would hit to the deck and come back up, because, yeah, because I couldn't physically move my back. So the amount of pain that I was in, then all of a sudden, 4 weeks down the line, 5, 6, 7 weeks down the line, I've been told that that's it. There's no training. There's no internationals. There's no England shirts. It's a plaster cast. We have to rest. You can't do anything. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, who am I? What's my identity? What's my goal? What's my purpose? Where do I go? Where do I start? And all that happens, then you've got that. And then alongside that, I said at the start, pain is your friend. As an athlete, pain is your friend. I had no pain. So what I couldn't understand is that I've got this really big injury that I know is going on in here, but I can't see it and I can't feel anything. There's no pain. And that was really, really hard, because psychologically you're like, well, I'm okay. There's nothing wrong with me. And yet you've been pulled back for a very long time.
How down did you get?
I hit rock bottom. Yeah. Depressed and didn't eat, lost my hair, lost my relationship. Yeah, I went, yeah.
But you're coming back from a year. Sorry, you're all right.
Sorry, I know, I'm trying to stop crying.
It's all right.
It's just what's really hard, you know, that you have to take yourself back there to talk about it. You have to take yourself back there. And it's like something you avoid, like, you know, it happened to you, but you just go, whoa, it's over there somewhere. It's now the past.
We try to block out the trauma in our lives. It's
totally.
It's a human, yeah. it's a natural response to pain, isn't it? Whether it's emotional or physical. sorry to have taken you back there, but I think again it's testament to who you are, and it says a lot about who you are, Fish, that you managed to come back. But take me back to the moment that you're on that pitch for the first time and everything's on the line, because if someone hits you, and or if you go in half-hearted, you could be, that's your career over, right? But it wasn't.
Yeah,
was
I was scared. I was really scared. So 2 weeks before I was due to go back into England and camp, I had a really supportive coach at the time, and he was like, Fish, I want to bring you back in and I want to take to Hong Kong. And I was like, Baz, I haven't played. He's like, Fish, I want you in my team. So I remember sitting down, I pulled up a chair alongside my mom at the time. I went back home, pulled up a chair back next to my mom, my stepdad. And I said, they've asked me to play, but we honestly didn't know, hand on heart, if I got hit. And basically we stopped having scans. We stopped having scans because we thought, let's treat the athlete, not the scan. So we stopped having scans. So I wasn't sure if they'd healed or not healed. We didn't know. All I knew is that we had made myself 2 years later as robust as I could have been around my core, around the way I moved, the way I walk. I had to learn to walk, crawl and run again, all from scratch. And we'd made myself so strong. So when the time came to go and play, there was no testing it out really. We did a bit of contact, but not really. We just did it light to see how I was going to get on. And they just said, Fish, it's a risk that we now take. Obviously a massive risk. So I pulled up a chair and I said, look, I've been asked to go and play in Hong Kong and I take the risk. And that is what it is. But if I get hit in, I risk being paralyzed. That was the risk I took. And I sat down there and we all had the same opinion, my mom, my stepdad and me, that I'd rather try than never know. Because if I never know, it would just be through fear of being paralyzed. And actually, I can't live with the thought of not knowing. So I took that risk.
But it is quite a big risk, isn't it?
A massive risk. Yeah, really scary. I was shit scared. So when I sat in the tunnel, I took my shirt in and I've already looked at the mirror and I know my role. I know exactly what I've got to do. I know exactly my role and how I'm going to do it. I took my shirt in. I stand at the back of the tunnel. I like to stand at the back of the line, hands on hips, and I'm ready. And I don't care. I'm ready to go. I'm just in that zone. It's four white lines, 14 players. Let's go, bring it on. But this time I stood in the tunnel and we were opposite Canada and I stood there thinking, shit, 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 shit. And that's all I could think. I didn't know if I was ready. And I kept thinking, you've got this, you've got this, you've got this. And I was like, what if I haven't? You have. What if you haven't? You have. And I literally remember standing there thinking, I'm not ready. I ran out and made my first hit and I was like, I'm okay. And from there, my confidence just grew. But then it took me about 5 years to get back up for a high ball again because I was just so scared of being taken out again.
But you did it. That's the point. Let's talk about growing up. You grew up in the Midlands, yeah?
I did. Brummie.
Brummie?
Brummie. China was pretty tough. I never really fitted in. I never really had friends. I wasn't liked, but I wasn't anyone's best mate. I was always on my own agenda. I don't know what agenda, but I was on this agenda to be the best I could ever be in something. I was on this path to prove my parents wrong that I was going to be someone.
Why did they say that you weren't?
They went through a divorce really early on in my age, I suppose, quite young. And I was separated from my brother and my sister and my dad. I grew up with my mom, hence why she's my rock. And she's the strongest woman I know. And I suppose she's brought me up pretty strong. But at the same time, I found it very hard. That's probably what kicked off my anorexia, my eating disorder. But life was pretty tough.
You didn't see your dad for a period of time or your brothers and sisters, is that right?
Yeah, I was completely separate from a lot of my family. And that was really hard. You know, it was really hard. And especially when your parents go, you know, certainly these days, a lot of parents go through divorce, but it doesn't stop the child feeling insignificant and lost. And it doesn't stop them feeling, well, why don't you want me? Why won't you talk to me? At the end of the day, just because one child's gone off with someone else doesn't mean that the parent doesn't want them. But yet that's how it's perceived to the child. And that's how it was to me. And my dad didn't have anything to do with me. That was it. I remember writing him a hate letter, you know, and being like, why? And then from there, I suppose I started to find my own feet without my dad. But then I had a stepdad in my life and he became my dad. And it was like that male figure that I just didn't have growing up.
It's very different to now, yeah, in terms of...
Action. Very different. Yeah, very different. I'm very close to my dad now, but
That's good. I mean, I saw that. So you have reconciled. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And I think anyone in life, I think we all go through hard times, but you do have to be able to accept and understand what's happened to you to be able to move on. It's part of the healing process. And, you know, we all make mistakes and we all go through things, and it doesn't define us, does it? People say, oh, that defined me, or that defined me. Nothing's defined me. I'm not defined by anything, but things have affected me. And you overcome them, you learn from them, you understand them, you accept them, and you move on and you keep going.
You said you moved around a lot. You've been through a divorce. So is that what you think sparked the eating disorder?
Yeah, I think rejection. I think rejection from my dad. I think moving around schools, not really fitting in anywhere, having my own identity. I was quite muscular as a girl when I was younger because I was training. My way to focus myself was my training, because I was on this mission to be an athlete. So I was always in the gym from the age of 12, 13 years old, I was in the gym. So I was muscular. I did have hair at the time, but I suppose I did look different in terms of my physique. My dad didn't really want anything to do with me. My mom was struggling and I was probably quite strong for her. Then I had a brother and sister I didn't really talk to. Then I went to secondary school, three different ones, because my mom moved around. So I went with her. And I suppose it just led me feeling to really, I had no home. I had no base. My home.
Yeah, yeah. You've always, it looks like that because you weren't integrating maybe so much with other kids, what you did was you said, well, if I'm not going to have that, then I'm going to get myself fit. I'm going to be that athlete. Was that something that drove you?
Yes. Yeah. And that's what drove me. That was what drove me. It drove me to be better for my mom. It drove me to look after her if anything happened to her. It drove me to kind of prove my dad that I could be someone. It drove me through a lot of, my emotion drove me through all my success, I would say. And it's weird because actually after 2016 Olympics, I kind of ran out of that emotion. And I felt like I have nothing to prove and I have nothing to fight for anyone. I have no one that doesn't need my help. I've got it all here. All I've done is prove it to myself. And actually, I don't feel like I'm fighting anymore. And it was almost like a weight lifted off my shoulders, because I thought, actually, I can just be who I am and there's nothing to feel, nothing to hide, because I've gone through literally the rockiest of roads my whole life.
Mm. But what I would say is that an eating disorder is contrary to someone who's training to become an international athlete, isn't it?
Yeah, that was hard.
I mean, were you aware of that? Or is it just that it was the emotion of where you, the emotional place that you were in, it didn't matter that you were training to become an athlete, you just didn't want to eat?
Yeah, it was hard. So originally I was trained to be an athlete and I was rowing at the time at Stratford Rowing Club. They're all in lycra, they're all skinny, you know, you all see on TV and adverts, women looking like slim and, you know, lovely blonde hair and, you know, they're all slim. And I didn't really fit into that mold. So you try as a youngster, and I think as a female, people still do, you try and fit into this mold of society about what you should look like. So that was probably quite strong when I was younger. And then I started sport and I knew I had to be fit for my sport. I knew I had to eat well, but there wasn't enough education around what is eating well. Is eating well eating less? No, it's not. Eating well isn't that at all, but that's how I perceived it. So I started eating well and eating less. Before I knew it, I started looking differently, I suppose getting skinnier, but I wasn't aware of that. Then my dad came back into my life for a period of time and it became quite a big conflict, and then it got worse, and then my mom met my stepdad and then it got even worse, and then it became about, you're telling me to eat, so you know what, I'm not going to eat. You're telling me to do it, you can get lost. I didn't care. And all of a sudden, gone.
You got offered £50 for eating a sandwich, is that right?
I did. I'll do that now.
I'll eat a sandwich of £50. I'll eat £50 worth of sandwiches. But no, you would literally, as a child, if someone said to you, here's £50, you, if you haven't been through an eating disorder, you go, what? Come on, eat the sandwich for £50. But it's not that. Could you take me back there and explain to me just what you were thinking at the time, where your emotions were?
I was completely lost. I was alone. My mom was pregnant again with my younger brother. I hated my stepdad. I hated my stepsister. I got bullied at school by my stepsister. So school was really uncomfortable. I came home. I didn't like my home life. Completely different house, completely different. A guy trying to play as my stepdad when he wasn't my stepdad. My mom's attention gone because she'd met someone else. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I'm lost. I've got no one, and I had no friends because I was at three different schools. Then I had no brothers and sisters because I didn't know them. So I was just so alone, I think. And then if you put that together with my goal of what I wanted to become an athlete, the only thing I knew was my sport. But then the first thing you do, the first thing I do when I'm upset, I don't eat. So I suppose I got stuck in this vicious circle of training because, right, you're not talking to me. I don't want to know you. I don't want to be here. Sod it. I'll put 50p in my shoe in case I got lost, off on the bike, go. And I'll just try and get myself lost and come back hours later, just and try and train as hard as I could. Because I knew I could be an athlete. I just didn't know what sport. So I was still on this mission. And then with all that, I then had all the stuff with my parents going on, and actually I couldn't control it. So it was lack of control. But the one thing I could control was my food. And then I realized it got their attention. Then that vicious circle started, and this I didn't realize this until a couple of years ago. And I realized actually, once I wasn't eating, I got my mom's attention, and then I did it more and more and more and more. But obviously, then I got stuck in a hole, and I got stuck in a road. There's no pictures out there of anything because I was stuck in a real bad hole for a good year, where every night I was seeing psychologists, counselors, doctors. I was weighed every night, threatened to go back into hospital, fed off drips. Went to see the girls and the guys on drips and being fed, and if I went down one more notch, that was going to be me. That happened for a good 8 months of my life into a year, and then probably affected me for 2 years. I then had glandular fever off the back of that, missed a lot of school, so it got worse.
And what pulled you through? What got you through it?
A nutritionist pulled me aside and he said to me, Heather Fisher, said, what do you want to be when you're older? I said, an athlete. And all he said to me, Kempy, was, you won't be an athlete unless you eat. That was all he said. And that set me up for life.
What's your advice to anyone who's either a family member or themselves are going through an eating disorder right now?
For the family, it's really hard. You've got to try and be there and be the good, be the bad, be the ugly, because you're trying to force someone to eat, but you overforce, they rebel. So it's about being there for them and just support them as much as they can, but emotionally, not just force them how to eat. If you make people feel comfortable and safe in an environment, they will naturally go and eat. So for me, it's that safe place to be, that environment, and creating that. And for the person, for the young person or the older person who's struggling with eating disorder, you got it's you or it's it. And it's literally down to if you're going to let it beat you. Because it literally is, I was lost in it. I was like, it was like a spiral. I didn't know, I was in the spiral until it was too late. And I would cry for help. I knew I was really ill. And I could feel it. I could feel my body change. I got the ball patches. I could feel, I was stick. I was literally a stick. But then I would fight and go, fuck off, mom. I don't want you in my life. Get lost. And I would fight the whole time. And she dragged me around to hospitals. And that made me worse. But then the people in those roles have a real big responsibility, because when I was seeing the counsellors and the doctors, they brought up so much of my past through what I'd been through already as a young child, that actually that made me worse, because it just brought everything up. It made me feel so much hate towards my parents and my mom especially, that I'd get in the car after a counselling session and just literally just go, don't even talk to me. But then actually all they're trying to do is bring it up. But you can't understand those emotions when you're that young. And eventually it was the drive of wanting to be that athlete so much that that's what got me through. And the words of that nutritionist have never, ever left me, because, you know, an eating disorder never leaves you. So when you have a bad day or you feel bad, you know, there are days now I'm a muscular female and I'm bald. So put that together, I feel literally like an alien sometimes. But I've got to remember that I'm built for a reason, and I've lost my hair for a reason. And there's a big full stop at the end of it. Because if I overthink that, you get lost in it all, and you get lost in your identity and your purpose, and, you know, people staring at you, you get lost in all that side of it. So I had to learn to probably put big full stops and just go, that's all it is.
So you overcome your eating disorder. But as you say, that it's always there somewhere in the background. But it's you find a way of putting a full stop behind it, and you progress into a sport that you love, which is rugby. But you also not only do you represent your country at sevens and at 15s, you also represent your country at bobsleighing.
Have you ever done that one?
No. And after reading what you said about it, I'm probably not going to, actually. My tender old age. Talk about, how did that happen?
Someone just came up to me and said, they didn't know my name, so I didn't say fish. They said, do you mind me asking what sport do you do? I said, I play rugby. And they said, we're looking for athletes for the 2010 Olympic Games. Do you fancy trialing out?
Really?
I sat in my vest looking like, you know, strong as anything. And I was like, I didn't know we had a bobsleigh team. I was like, I know Cool Runnings. I know the Lucky Egg. And that's as good as it gets. But then from there, I just progressed on to Team GB.
It's one of those things. It's like when you watch the skiing, right? Until you actually go skiing, because you see it on the television, it looks a bit like that, doesn't it? Yeah. When you get to the piste, it's a bit like that.
It's literally like this.
And for a bobsleigh to reach 60, 70, 80 miles an hour, it has to be going down like that, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, it's a ridiculous sport. I got to the top of the mountain. So I'd done all my trials and stuff, and I wasn't the fastest, but I was starting to run downhill, so I was starting to accumulate speed. So I was starting to become this athlete that was more endurance-based, and I was strong, I was powerful, and I was fit. So I was overall a good athlete. But then I became very specialized. Like I was pushing for 5 seconds max, or I was lifting for 3 reps and no more. So I became very specialized in my speed and power, but then everything else.
So in terms of playing 80 minutes, you wouldn't have been able to do it.
No, I wasn't able to do.
You could shove something very, very heavy, very, very quickly over a short period of time.
Yeah.
What the job is, isn't it? It's to get the going as fast as possible and jump into it, right?
Exactly, which is ridiculous. I got to the top of the mountain and I was like, shit. And my coach Pete like pushed me off. I was like, off you go, fish. I'm like, oh my God. And I was like, oh, this is okay. I remember looking around, it was Lake Placid. So we'd had this build up for like 6 months. And first of all, I had the difficult conversation with England to say, if I'm good enough, I'll be back. That was it. That's all I said. I said, if I'm good enough for England, I'll be there in the future. I've got an opportunity right now that I can't say no to. And he was like, okay, Fisher, good luck. I was like, shit, I've made my bed now. I have to lie in it. So off I went and I went training. And I loved the training at Bath University. But when it went to the slopes, oh my gosh, I literally hated it. And I had a headache every day. My eyes were streaming. My nose was streaming. My abs were hurting. My forearms were killing. I was absolutely freezing cold in minus 40 degrees in like Lycra and like nothing else on. I was honestly, it was so hard. It was so tough.
I look at it and I go, ah, oh, that's all right. And then once they're in there, they're safe. But it's crazy. Not hard, is it?
No, it's crazy. You get more bumps in there than you do in rugby.
Do you really? Did you feel more battered and bruised?
I had bruises, battered and bruised everywhere, like ice burns. You have to really tuck up. And then, you know, your head's being pushed down. Like the G-force on your body is insane. Like everything's burning. But not even that. Like, then you have to know where you are at the bottom of the track. But then pull on the brakes. But then I started to get like, because I'd had like a few concussions in rugby, I used to get quite bad motion sickness. So as you can imagine, going down a roller coaster at 90 miles an hour, I was like, oh my God.
So there you are, you're in a bobsleigh going down a hill that's perpendicular at 90-80 miles an hour and you get travel sickness.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? I was sick in my helmet once and that wasn't so good.
At what point in the journey was that? Was that at the beginning? Was it swilling around for some time inside that helmet?
No, it was towards the bottom of the track, thank gosh. It was literally in Canada as well. It's pretty bad. But I think because I had a couple of, I basically did bobsleigh and went back to rugby for the winter and came back out for bobsleigh. But I'd broken my hand, so I was in a plaster cast in one hand. And obviously, as you push off the bob, I had a plaster cast. So I jumped in with one arm. I made it in, thank God. But then because I'd hit my head and I'd just come off the back of a World Cup in 15s. And I would still like to think I could have made the Olympics in 2010. So the World Cup was in 2009 and the early 2010. And then the Olympic Games was happening in 2010. I went back out there. I was a bit heavier. So I was on the back of my diet, which again was really shit for anorexia. But I just tried to make do with what I got. McLaren got involved. They put lighter wings on so I could try and compete. But I'd had a couple of knocks to my head and got completely knocked out, like wiped, no memory, in the World Cup months ago. And then so when I went out to bobsleigh, I was sick in my helmet and couldn't cope with them. Couldn't cope with the speed.
And is that what? And is that what finished your career with that?
Yeah, it was really. It was a combination, if I'm honest, Kempe. It was a combination of being away from home, and I think because I've craved stability my whole life, I'm so now unstable. I'm literally living around the world out of suitcases, traveling the world being a bobslayer, but no real security behind me. I didn't feel comfortable with that. Great being an athlete, but it's all about being, for me, it was about achieving as a whole person, not just in one sport, you know. So there was that on my mind. Then I had my hair loss started to occur, and I think that was because of the diet that I was starting to eat a European diet. Like, have goulash for breakfast, for crying out loud, you know, like just weird stuff for breakfast. And it was just what it was, because you would end up in different countries. So the food started to change, it then started to affect my stomach. Then I was starting to get ill with bobsleigh.
Right. Do you think, Fish, that the fact that you'd had that eating disorder and then that change in diet had that exacerbated?
Yeah, I think so. It's really hard to tell, isn't it? Like, it's really hard to tell, but I think so. I think my anorexia has obviously done stuff to my body more than I thought it probably could have done. And you don't understand that when you're young and going through it, you don't understand the effects it has. Then I'm playing a contact sport and I push myself to my absolute max. Like, I'm a bit ridiculous in my training. And then that combined, then swapping sports. And every Friday you would race off and put pressure on yourself to be the best and be the best you could be to race and represent Team GB for that weekend. But I was just getting quite ill, and that's probably because of my glandular fever. So I had glandular fever again for the second time, and then I had burnout. So I was due to go to the World Championships with Team GB. And then a doctor pulled me out because I was burnt out. I had overtraining syndrome. So they pulled me out from that. And I literally went back home to my stepdad and my mum at the time. Had a massive cry, reevaluated life, and just thought, you know what? I just need a normal job I need stability. That didn't last very long, it lasted a week.
What did you do?
Well, I wasn't really a qualified teacher, but I went to teach in school. Don't ask how it happened, but that happened for about a week. My stepdad had a furniture business, so I was lifting sofas around. But I didn't want to see a gym. And then I knew I wasn't very well because I didn't want to see a gym. I didn't want to train. I didn't want to do anything. I just wanted to be normal, so-called normal. But then after approximately probably 3 weeks, I thought, Fish, come on, you've still got this ahead of you. Like, get back out there. But then I had a phone call from my current coach, who's just finished now the sevens program. And then I've been full-time sevens player since.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Do you think you're obsessive?
Yeah. I think all successful people are to a certain extent. I think you have to be if you want to succeed. And I don't think it's the defining or definition of success, but I do think, yeah, you have to be pretty obsessive and pretty controlling to be at the top, because I think so much can throw you off the top. It's almost easy to get to the top. What's hard is staying at the top.
Yeah. And you've been there or thereabouts for a very long time, right?
Yeah, I've been lucky. I've worked my socks off. You know, someone just said today, if you're on the phone, Fish, like, you've got it set up. I'm like, I haven't, mate. I've just worked my socks off. And I always wanted my sport. If women's sport could never, like, it's not an excuse because I'm female, and I would never have that excuse. I'd compete against, you know, a guy at any time, and I don't care about the gender. So for me, when someone goes, oh, you play rugby and you're female, so I don't give a shit. I'll always make sure I represent females in such a positive way that actually take gender out of it. I know I can hit the top. And for me, it's been really important representing females and myself, because then I think you can springboard to other levels and other components of life just because of what you've gone through.
Experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Talk about, you know, how you first realized that you had alopecia.
That's probably the hardest time in my life. This one always makes you cry, and I'm not going to cry. But this, yeah, for me, my hair loss was... lost my identity. I'm ugly, don't fit in, shouldn't be going out, shouldn't be meeting people, shouldn't be going out into public places, shouldn't be seen. This was like rock bottom.
Where were you in your career at the time, sports career?
I was about to represent England in a World Cup.
Far out.
Yeah, Sky Sports are really good, actually, because they covered a lot of the World Cup, all the World Cup, and they made a real positive, I suppose, not campaign, but awareness about my alopecia, because I had a lot of messages about cancer and what's wrong with Fisher, she's ill. And I suppose I just felt like I couldn't, it changed me. When I lost my hair, my personality went from here to like here.
Did it affect the way you played? Did it affect them? I'm talking from a mental point of view.
No. That's the only thing why the love of rugby is still there. Because on the pitch is the only time that I can be myself without people judging what I look like. They judge my performance. Everywhere I went, people would just turn around and stare and stop. And I'll be in Hong Kong and I'll have like people or police waiting outside. Yeah, and I'll be in the non-players bit, okay, so in the audience bit, and I'll go to the toilet, and I'll have, like, police waiting outside with a toilet siren, or I've had, like, women, like, get their broomsticks and try and prod the toilets open to get me out.
Because they think what? Because they think you're
the wrong
gender.
Because they think I'm a guy and a girl. Yeah. You can't understand the gender. And originally it's happening, I'd get upset, and then I'd be like, get down about it. My emotions go like this. But actually I've learned that it's their naivety, and I'm true to who I am, and I don't want to wear a wig, I don't want to hide, because that brings on different emotions. A wig brings on different emotions. It didn't sit right with me.
Didn't sit right with you?
No, it just didn't sit right. I just didn't feel like I was me. I would spend most of the time there, like, just looking at, like, being really proud of it, and then I would, like, be looking at myself like this, and then I'd soon realize I can't take it off because it's not really real. And then it kind of hits home, actually, why am I wearing it?
Being genuine, very important to you.
Everyone I meet, colleagues, people I work with or do things with, that's close to my heart, because I think I've lived my whole life being genuine, between honest and true to who I am, with no hidden, that's it. And not for any more reason than that's the way I deal with it. And I've realised it helps other people. That's it.
You actually work for the Alopecia Foundation. You're an ambassador.
Yeah, ambassador. Yeah.
Just explain to me, Fish, what alopecia is, please.
They don't really know themselves, so I'm going to try and explain here. But no one really knows. Hence, there's no cure.
You know that it's got something to do with the immune system, correct?
Yeah, they say so. It affects the immune system. So it's when the hair follicles attack the... Yeah, your immune system attacks the hair follicles. That's basically what it is. So I suppose it's similar to when people don't have enough of the fighting cells and they eat their own cells, and then they haven't got enough immunity to be able to support their system. It's similar. So when your body's under pressure, some people might get spots. And that's a sign if you're tired, you've overdone it. And for people who, I suppose, struggle with immunity, it will be hair loss, it will be body hair, it will be... constantly being run down, or if I'm fatigued, I'm really fatigued. Like, I'm either full of energy, and it's normally on caffeine and sugar because I go and play sevens, so you're high on caffeine and sugar, or I'm just absolutely zonked. And when I'm tired, the whole system is like crashed, like you can tell. But that's, again, just immunity, and that's something I've had to train with, as well as being an athlete. I've had to understand my body and understand when to stop. Like when the girl's on the line ready to go again for another 500 meters, you know, I've got to then know that I've got to rest and stop and chill, because that's what I need to do for me. So it's affected my whole career, but it is for young people who have it now, it's horrible that, you know, I have so many messages of people who have lost their hair. There's no real defining factor of why. They say it could be stress, they say it could be a moment, they say it could be just you're overworked and your body just attacks it, but it comes down to immunity. There is a strong link between the stomach and the gut and the hair loss, which now, if you put that together, that could be my alopecia, that and my anorexia together. So there's different research coming out, but there's no tablet, there's nothing you can do to help it grow back. And there's nothing, I take stuff to support my immune system, but that doesn't seem to affect the hair.
Again, Fish, I say this to you, this is your comeback kid. What, you know, eating disorder, breaking your back, breaking your hand. What made you get over it? Are you over it?
I'm not over it, but I've kind of accepted. I don't think I'll ever get over it, but I have accepted it more. I'm reminded of it every day because everyone else reminds me of it because they stare or they say something or they look. So I'm reminded of it and I don't forget. But I don't know, you know, I think I try and tell myself that this is the way I'm supposed to be. This is obviously who I am, and I've got a role to play, and maybe that role is coming to fruition, and maybe I've got more to do. I think I have got more to do. I think I'm just dying out my life outside of rugby now. So I've got more to go and do, and maybe this is why I'm like I am. I try to make it work for me, but I think I still struggle now. That's been my hardest moment, and it sounds a bit pathetic because it's like, well, it's just hair. And I challenge anyone now who listens or watches to go, right, go and get rid of your hair for the whole rest of your life. And they'll go, well, no, I'm not getting a cut. I'm not doing that. But yeah, actually, yours will grow back. Mine doesn't. And it does affect your relationships. It affects the media stuff you do. It affects your roles that you do in life. It affects all of it. And I think it's been a stumbling block, I think, to some, you know, sponsors or partnerships. And I think it's just making sure that I marry up the right people and do the right thing in life. And, you know, that's why it's very important to me that the values that I work with and people I work with, you know, are the same.
So would you say that the way that you've got through this or are going through this is that you reevaluate who you are and what makes you who you are, and you also surround yourself with people who genuinely care for you and are there to support you and understand you?
Yeah, I think when you go through anything tough in life, and I've been through quite a lot, it doesn't define you, but it makes you think about what's important. It makes you think about what you need in life and then what you want, what you desire. And I think it makes you question who you are. And I think the biggest thing I'll say to anyone is, do you know who you are? Do you know what you stand for? Do you know who you are? Do you know where you're going? And for me, I can answer those questions now. And probably 2 years ago, at the Olympics, I wouldn't have answered who I was. I didn't know who I was. I think when you're in sport at international level, people put you on a pedestal. People think you're superhuman. And people think you don't struggle. Actually, we do struggle. I'm not afraid to say I struggle. I think some of the strongest people I know are the most vulnerable people. And that's because they know how to be vulnerable and true to themselves. But then they switch that switch and they are off. And I think the learning from the toughest moments is like, it's okay not to be okay. At the same time, when it's time to go, you go.
And it's not just, I mean, as you say, it's not just your head, is it? It's all over you. Your follicles are all over you.
Yeah, it changes. Yeah, it changes. So like I lost my eyelashes and my eyebrows for about 4 years ago. But I didn't understand the role of them until I lost them.
Well, they stop things getting in your eye, don't they?
Yeah, I'm constantly getting stuff in my eyes, and I'm constantly in sevens, like we play like in 30, 40, 50 degrees heat, right?
Right, yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't put sun cream on because it drops into my eyes.
And yeah, yeah, that's horrible, right?
Yeah. And then if I get stuff in my eyes, I can't get it out. So sometimes I'll be rubbing it until I get a clump into my eye and I can pull it out because I can't just filter anything out of my eyes. I get really sore eyes. Are you trying to look at my eyes?
I'm thinking about it because you're absolutely...
Yeah, I get really sore eyes. But you don't really think about it.
But Fish, you don't think about it until it happens to you, do you?
Yeah, exactly.
And no one else is going to think about it until it happens to them.
Exactly. You got it. And then you go down the route of thinking, well, I'll just get them like drawn on. But then you think, now I look a bit weird. And no, my look, I'll draw it on here and it'll grow back here. And then you go down the route of eyelashes. I think you'll just stick them, but then you realize that you need eyelashes to stick the eyelashes too. So I'm like, so yeah. So
also, that is a real, can I just go back to you? Because if you're playing in a really hot, you're out for 80 minutes plus, it's hitting the dome head, right? Which is going to crisp up. It's going to burn.
It does. Yeah. Sometimes my head's in a state.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't put cream on it because that's going to run in your, a bit of advice. I do use something. I'm giving away my
tip. Come on. What is it? Tell me your tip.
I use a, I found it in I think it was it in Peru or?
Come on, tell me. Venezuela.
It's called HelioCare. And it's like a compact that you put on your head and you rub it in. It's like on a pat. And I rub it. I don't have makeup people and you make the.
It's got a factor, it's got a factor like 50 in it. It's got
factor 50 in it. And you just rub it on your head. And it protects your head a bit. And also, as you get older, you don't want those kind of age spots and all the other stuff that you get when you get older.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a little tip from the Kempster.
Tell you what, that's quite a good tip.
HelioCare. I don't own shares in the company. but again, there you go. Because so, you could that runs in your eyes. But then that's what your eyebrows are there for.
Stop
stuff running into your eyes. And also that's what your eyelashes are there to help you.
Exactly. You got it. So it's pretty tough being alopecia. But I'm learning to live with it and make it work for me. No? I'll tell you what happened once. Let me butt in here. You'll like this one. So once when I was trying to make my hair grow back, I went to Turkey on holiday and this barber's convinced me, madam, I help you grow your hair back. And I was like, okay, what's this about? He sat me in a chair. I'm so stupid because I actually did it. Imagine this now, Kempi, on your head. So metal bristle brush.
Oh!
Scrubbed onto the head everywhere until it's bleeding. Then, this gets worse, garlic, lemon and salt rubbed into it. Literally, honestly, I was an absolute pieces. And my head for the whole of that holiday was on absolute fire. But my hair grew back.
You're kidding me.
It grew. No, it grew. But I didn't have that pain ever again.
So I'm not buying a wire brush, lemon. That's a marinade for chicken.
Yes, it is. Honestly, it was ridiculous.
And that's it. It's a fantastic. Put some garlic, lemon.
Chili flakes.
Chili flakes, yeah. Yeah, mate, are you mad?
I tried it, but I wouldn't have done anything.
Fish, did it really make your hair grow back?
No, I had, the next day I woke up, I had spikes in my hair. It was growing back. Promise you, hand on heart, but there's no way I was going for that pain. No way I was going for that pain ever again. That was like crying. I was crying.
Just tell me about the future now. Also, one thing I do want to talk to you about. There's two things actually, because you mentioned reading up. Bisham was really important to you, wasn't it? Bisham Abbey. So Bisham is the centre, isn't it, for sports injuries for athletes? Yeah, British athletes.
Yeah.
Were they good? How good were they?
Oh yeah, really good. Like, so you've at Bisham Abbey, you've got different programs. You've got England hockey, you've got the rowers, you've got GB rowers, you've got tennis, you've got football, you've got different sports there. We've just moved from there to Twickenham. But yeah, we were there for 4 or 5 years. It's a great setup. Was, you know, like you're around like-minded athletes, you're around other Olympians and other, you all of a sudden realize that actually you are quite normal. We're quite obsessive, controlling, crazy characters, but actually we're quite normal in our world of sport, in our bubble. They're really good. And that was where I did my rehab for my back injury as well. You know, when I broke my back, that was where all my rehab took place.
Is that when you become a DJ on Marlowe FM?
I want to be a radio presenter. That's actually what I want to do.
So is that the future? Let's talk about the future.
I'd like to be a radio presenter. It's just kind of getting myself out there and someone, I think, give me an opportunity to go, let's see what you're like. I'd love to do that. And
what, in sports or just general? No,
I'd love to be a breakfast presenter.
Why not?
That's what I'd love. For me, like, I don't know, I've probably got the face of radio.
Same here. Look where you got me.
No, I do love radio. I love the fact that you can make someone feel good and positive and make someone laugh and smile. I think I've spent so many days in the car, getting up early, put my England kit on, driving down to Bisham and training, and what's kept me going is the radio. And yeah, I love that connection that you can really connect to people. So I'd love to be a radio presenter.
Fish, thank you very, very much for talking to me. You are an exceptional person.
Thanks, Kempe. Appreciate that.
Pleasure.
Thank you for having me on.
Anytime, Fish, anytime.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Kempcast. If you haven't already, please subscribe, rate, and review. You can find me on Twitter at Ross Kemp and on Instagram at Ross Kemp TV. This has been a Freshwater and the Chancer Collective production. Thanks to the team and One Fine Play. And until the next episode, goodbye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.